Standing before the kitchen sink and regarding the bright brass faucets that gleamed so far away, each with a bead of water at its nose, slowly swelling, falling, David again became aware that this world had been created without thought of him. He was thirsty, but the iron hip of the sink rested on legs tall almost as his own body, and by no stretch of arm, no leap, could he ever reach the distant tap. Where did the water come from that lurked so secretly in the curve of brass? Where did it go, gurgling down the drain? What a strange world must be hidden behind the walls of a house. But he was thirsty.
I just want to, am I on?
Yeah.
I just want to say, you can hear me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yes.
That this is taken from a wonderful novel by Henry Roth called Call It Sleep. And it is meant to highlight the change that so many people have to go through coming to a new place when the old place is no longer a welcoming place. And this was true for this little boy.
Thank you. I was going to ask you, what is the significance of that? It's such a beautiful passage.
Yeah.
So thank you. Many of you know Leslie, and she's been active at C3 for several years. And most of you know she is Jewish and would like to share with us what she can to increase our understanding of Judaism and her experience. So where would you like to start with this conversation?
Well, I'd just like to start a little bit with my biography. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, where it is not unusual to be Jewish. I am the daughter of a mom whose mom came from Romania as an immigrant, and whose father came from Kiev as an immigrant. They came in the 1900s. Came because life was getting, there were periods of very difficult times for Jews in Eastern Europe. There was a sense of unease and uncertainty as principalities changed. The rules, the restrictions on the Jewish life changed. There was violence. There was something called pogroms that happened where there would be a massacre of Jews. Life was just very hard. And the doors of America were open. So people did their best. There was a lot of Jewish emigration at that time. So that's me, and I married Barry Castro, who was also Jewish, and his life was a little different. He was the son of immigrants. His father was born in Greece, in Turkey, in Thessalonica, which is just at the border of Turkey and Greece. And the reason his name was Castro and the reason his father was born in Greece is that his background was as a Sephardic Jew who grew up, whose family for centuries lived in Spain. And so Jews were part of the Roman Empire. They traveled with the Roman Empire. Many Jews settled in Spain Spain since 700, most of Spain was run by Islam, the Islamic Caliphate. So that was a very good pairing. So there was comity between the Jews and the Muslims and education and and innovation and libraries and beautiful architecture. And it was a wonderful example of what people can do in peace. As Spain was reconquered by Catholicism from the north to the south in 1492, that was pretty much complete. And Jews at that point were told they could convert to Christianity, be killed, or get out of town quickly. So there was a huge change. Islam at that point was the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottoman Empire welcomed Jews. So many Jews traveled all the way to the Ottoman Empire, and that's how my husband's father happened to be born in Turkey. And Castro was the surname there. His mother was born in Poland in a town called Wladowa, and she was able to come to the United States maybe in the 20s because she had an older brother who had come. But she had several siblings who weren't able to come, and several of those siblings died in the Holocaust. And my husband was a little boy following the newspapers and kind of knew that that was the story. For me, that's a very dramatic piece of my history and his history. Two of his uncles survived the Holocaust, and the uncle that I got connected to and used to visit us in Grand Rapids, Ersch, was a carpenter in his little town, and he was hired. There was a lot of use of Jews to do things for the German occupiers, and he built a hiding place for himself under the furnace in this concentration camp in the office, and heard a little bit later that all the Jews would be shot, liquidated, and he hid under he went into his hiding place for 2 or 3 days until it was quiet, and then came out and hooked up with a sister of his, and they lived in the forest for most of the war, and she was ultimately killed. But Gersh and his brother Ersch, who had joined the Russian army, which was right across the river. Russia was right across the Bug River where they were living. Both survived and came to New York. So through my husband's life, the history of the Jews is, or at least the modern history of the Jews, is very clear. And then I had a conversation with some neighbors who had a beautiful Jewish star in brass and a little Torah that opens up on it. And we were talking about backgrounds, and I acknowledged that I told about my background, and they said, "Boy, we haven't met any Jews until now." And they went and got this item and gave it to me. So I realized that people in West Michigan may have questions about Judaism. And Judaism is the oldest continuous monotheistic religion that we have in the Western world. I have to say I do not know about the Eastern world. But the God that became the God of the Christian sect at that time, and then later the Christian religion, and Allah, the God of the Muslims, is kind of the same God, that one God, that's more loving than capricious, that's more life-giving than murderous. So there's an importance in this community and in all communities to know something more about Judaism.
Maybe I have an observation more than a question, but you can comment if you want. And I don't know if anybody else would identify with this, but I can scarcely remember what states my parents were born in. And you just gave this entire lineage in great detail, and it's one thing I also always associate, particularly with Jewish people, is that there's this deep sense of ancestral lineage and understanding. And there's a phrase, and I'm not sure who came up with it, it might have been Barbara Brown Taylor, holy envy, where there's something about another tradition or religion that you admire. And so I just wanted to reflect that. And I don't know if there's anything to say about it, but just wanted to note it.
Part of the genealogy piece and the knowledge is that we are not from a place. We're from the place where Jews lived. So a Jew living in the Ukraine, for example, had to get permission to live there because it was beyond the pale of settlement. The settlement of that country was where Jews could live and couldn't live other places. So my grandfather's father must have had a skill that was able to be there. So when I said to my mom, oh, so we're Russian or we're Romanian? She said, not really, we're Jewish. So Jewish is the world we come from. Yiddish is the language that Jews from all the different places in Eastern Europe spoke, and also the language of the country. But there's a, and I'm not exact, well, so there's an importance of what ground do I stand on? Mm-hmm. There's a default American Christian, white American Christian in America. On the coast, there's a little more diversity and sophistication about where people come from. But in the Midwest, it could be not at all. I had another question from somebody who, in a Presbyterian church, and there was something that came up that I was Jewish. He said, oh, do you guys believe in Jesus? And I said, not so much. And so that was another conversation. And part of my understanding going to school, we were lower middle class, which meant that we were Jewish Protestants is what we called non-Jewish people, and Catholics. So in New York, there were fewer... anyway, the Jews, Protestants, and Catholics were who lived on my block. And my instruction from my parents was, okay, we're Jewish, so when we sing the Christmas carols at school, you just don't say the word Jesus. You'd be quiet then. But when I got older and explained to this gentleman, it came to me that Jews Judaism is a messianic religion. So there is the sense that a Messiah is coming, but that Messiah is a human person. And God, the most important prayer in Judaism is the Shema. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, which means, God is one. Hear, O Israel, God the Lord God is one. One monotheistic God who doesn't even have a name. So Yahweh is a word called God. The name of God is very complicated for Jews, and there are kind of nicknames given. But the one God is not exactly human either, and wouldn't be in this world a half God, half man that Jesus was seen as, the Son of God. The Jewish God did not have a son. The Jewish God, it was too mysterious to have a son. And since Judaism was centered just around the time of Jesus' birth, was centered in Jerusalem, the notion that God, I'm losing my track, but that's what I'm going to say.
Well, in our conversations leading up to this, one of the things you mentioned was about your children, their spiritual journeys, and that it, by extension, I think of like what's on your mind as a secular Jewish woman, as a parent, as a grandparent, about what's happening in our society and what that means for Jews in America.
I have Jewish friends who stayed much closer to the temple and do have Jewish grandchildren. That was not part of my children's upbringing. We had bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs for the children, and that was impressive to our friends, because a child who is 13 and runs the service is a pretty impressive thing. Mm-hmm. So the kid gets up and they read from the Torah, and they're reading Hebrew, and then they give a little talk about what they've read, and then we have a party. So that's the rite of passage. But that becomes the move to adulthood for the boys. So the boys then can be part of what's called a minyan, which is five men, Jewish men, who can do the prayer, certain kinds of prayers. So we did that, not knowing the future of our children and not knowing if that would be in their future important, and whether that would be a lack if we didn't provide that. So we did do the bar mitzvahs, but the kids stopped going to Sunday school after that. And my daughter was not as into it as she was able to say. So that was fine with us. So the notion that we have an obligation to, our obligation was to the ethical life, the life of good, the being a good person, being a kind person, doing the right thing, the Jewish cultural things, reading broadly, following your own spirit at where you want to go. We didn't have a a mission like that.
But it seems like you embody it somehow still, even if it wasn't an outward mission. So when, maybe in closing, to leave on an optimistic note maybe of something that's could be meaningful, like what in the Jewish faith or tradition do you believe is meaningful that could have meaning for all of us at this time? Of uncertainty and chaos and whatever else is going on?
I would say welcome the immigrant. Welcome the immigrant. Make a home for the immigrant. Understand that people are displaced, and especially with climate becoming a reason for people being displaced. Work toward policies that allow people to come here and be aware of the immigration problems currently in Europe and learn about Zionism and the interesting prescient idea that Jews were not going to be able to continue in Europe because of anti-Semitism and needed a place of their own. So in the research I've been doing, I'm a little more sympathetic to the creation of Israel as a place for a homeland, so to speak. But there are people that need our understanding and our help all over the world. And I would say that would be my main message.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Leslie. Thank you for sharing so generously and vulnerably. And I hope there's so much to talk about, right? So I hope folks are able to join for Talk Back and continue the conversation and what questions you have for Leslie.
Well, and it's been a pleasure to work with you on this. So thank you, Beth.
You're welcome. Thanks.